You're listening to KJZZ's Here and Now in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. CoreLogic is projecting U.S. housing prices to rise by more than 5% by next summer, which would get them past 2006 peak levels by the end of 2017. So should nervousness reign, considering what happened not long after those top prices were reached a decade ago? With me to tell us whether to worry or stay calm is Anthony Sanders, distinguished professor of real estate finance in the School of Business at George Mason University. He also taught at the University of Chicago, ASU, and The Ohio State University. Professor Sanders, how are you?
Hey, thanks a lot, Steve, for having me.
Yeah, good to have you back. So in general, what are housing prices looking like around the country right now? Is there reason for people to start worrying or no?
Well, the answer is yes. However, for a different set of reasons than we saw back in the housing bubble. Let me clarify. So CoreLogic has come out and said housing prices are supposed to grow at about, 5.6% next year.
Right.
Which is, again, it's slowing down because it's been rising faster than that recently. That's the good news. However, the bad news is that average wage growth is only about 2.5% per year. So housing prices, once again, growth rates are outstripping the ability to pay for it. And that's always dangerous, and that's usually the sign of a bubble. Now, having said that, let me discuss market conditions. Mm-hmm. During the housing bubble, we had lots of mortgage fraud. We had lots of products such as Alt-A loans, which better known as liar loans. And a lot of the subprime products that we used to have are not gone, but they're greatly trimmed back. And so essentially the banks are making loans that are better underwritten. So we're not seeing some of the problem. But again, that doesn't alleviate the fact that we now have wage growth, literally half of what house prices are growing at, which is not a good sign.
So are we going to get potentially then more people underwater again who are saying to themselves, oh, well, I can afford? I mean, are the loans available to any degree to the extent that they were a decade ago?
Well, they have recently. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae have started what they call expanding the credit box, which means letting people with lower credit scores or FICO scores apply for a loan. However, despite some of the hysteria I've been reading, they're not really opening the floodgates. They're just feeling their way because they don't want to go through another fiasco like that happened in 2007 through 2009. But the issue is that wage growth since 2007 has been dead slow. It's half of what it used to be. So that's a problem. So what do we do if housing's particularly Arizona? You're blessed. You went through a correction. That's not the blessed part. But the blessed part is, I know from personal experience, but the blessed part is your housing prices are considerably lower than they are on the West Coast, like L.A., San Diego, San Francisco, Seattle, et cetera. Now, they're having real problems with house prices. In fact, even San Francisco is starting to slow down rather dramatically in terms of home sales and price growth. So I think Arizona is well situated, but I don't see the bubble like we saw back in 2007. This is a different type of bubble. This is purely a wage growth issue.
Well, the Arizona being well situated, though, you also wrote recently on your blog, Confounded Interest, about Los Angeles having the lowest U.S. home ownership rate with the seventh most expensive rents. And one would think that some of those people from L.A., as they do in other professions, might end up coming to the Phoenix area. But then does that cause a bubble here again? Because people are saying, well, yes, compared to Los Angeles, Phoenix is cheap, but then they drive it up again, so it's no longer cheap.
Well, history repeats itself, and you're right for noticing that. L.A. does have the worst home ownership rate in the United States and the seventh worst rental rates. So either people are going to have to leave Phoenix, they're going to have to build a lot more multifamily housing, but they're not going to be able to get into owner-occupied housing. Owner-occupied housing in the L.A. area is just out of sight. And it's just not within the reach of the middle-class community anymore. So, they're either going to have to pick up and move or just rent. But again, part of it's a failure of the multifamily sector to deliver a proper amount of supply, and they're just not doing it.
Now, you have an expertise not just in real estate, but in finance in general. And without getting this too political because I don't want to have it be about the presidential candidates. Are there certain policies that you think would make sense that would, let's say, benefit the so-called middle class that could also get things where wages are up, but it doesn't necessarily involve certain things that certain parties won't even discuss, like tax increases and that sort of thing? Do you think there are policies that could happen that could make it so wages go up so that with housing prices going up, there could be a balance of some sort? Or is that post-Great Recession almost an impossibility?
Well, it's not an impossibility. We kind of, how should I say, we shot ourselves in the foot following the Great Recession, in the sense that I think a lot of people in Congress in particular and the administration misread what the cause of the recession was. And so all their attempts to save us from another recession kind of doomed us to a very slow growth economy. I'll give you a good example, because I was listening to your people before I got on clean energy. I wanted to chime in, but I'm not rude. Well, let me just discuss what happened. After the crash, something had to be done. Dodd-Frank, which was a massive bill, legislation that formed the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which I don't know if you saw this, but one of the lower courts deemed that they were not constitutionally authorized to do what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be an interesting play. But what they did, they came in and they created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which has been very kind of, and I don't disagree with everything they're saying. Parts of me agree with it, parts of me don't. I have a lot of parts. But in a sense, sort of banning banks from making subprime lending of certain types is, again, the lower income households demand credit, and we should give it to them. I don't like the government rationing out credit to people and being in control of that. They also said we can't have certain types of mortgages anymore. You can't have a mortgage longer than 30 years, although most governments in Europe are now going to 50-year debt. It's kind of passé and behind the times. But there's a lot of legislation that's put in there that has really restricted bank lending. Mm. And by the way, a lot of the big banks are out of the lending business, thanks to Dodd-Frank and Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. I think only Wells Fargo is left amongst the big lenders.
And we know what problems they're having.
They have a sparkling reputation. But now we end up with other non-bank lenders really being big players in the market, and some of them are not regulated at all. So I think some of the policy we put in, and again, EPA, I have asthma, so bless their hearts. I appreciate not spewing the atmosphere with tons of pollutants. On the other hand, you create enough bad rules, you end up shutting down small businesses. And small business growth, which I'm sure you also read on my blog, is down to almost non-existent levels, other than starting up very small things like food carts and things like that in Los Angeles, which is an actually excellent business model. But again, we've gotten to the point where we went regulation crazy, and we're now seeing a massive decline in the ability of American households to earn money. What? So they could start deregulating, but that's almost a no-no term. And I guarantee you, if Hillary's elected, we're just going to see more and more regulation. So.
Well, Professor, that's all the time we have. But thanks very much for the time, as always. Anthony Sanders is Distinguished Professor of Real Estate Finance in the School of Business at George Mason University. Have a good rest of the day. Thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
And still to come on Here and Now, we'll look at the environmental history of the American West, and we'll have some climate change fiction. Stay with us on Here and Now.